On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp. Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
Dozier drives one to left field. Ben Zobrist going back. He has done it again.
Brian Dozier can handle the high fastball, and he's one of the few guys. He's so quick with his hands, and I don't believe that's a pitch he actually looks for. He just reacts so well to the ball up.
A high fly to left field and deep. Zobrist back, still back. That ball is gone. A grand slam for Trevor Plouffe. He nearly passed Sano at first base, but it's a grand slam for Trevor Plouffe.
Welcome in to On Deck Radio. I'm David Helmer. Pete is busy covering a little bit of wrestling. Gene and Al are taking a little coaching hiatus right now. Gino's season actually ends pretty soon, so we're hoping to get him back in studio in the next couple of weeks. And the story of last night, a storm was brewing in the metro area, but there was also one brewing with a couple of Twins bats. Dozier leads off the game with a home run, picks up right where he left off from the All-Star game pretty much. And Trevor Plouffe added the insurance that wasn't actually needed, hitting a grand slam. Irvin Santana pitched a decent gem, you could say.
Sure.
And Brian Dozier seems to be the real story here in Minnesota. So, guys, what's he doing? He's playing with a chip on his shoulder. Tom Schreier, Brandon Warren in studio. What do you got?
Brandon, what was that stat you had? He said a couple years ago he was hitting like 278 in low A, right, out of college?
Oh, yeah. Made me think about it here. But he was in low A as a 23-year-old, hitting for no power, you know, a little discipline. But you're looking at a shortstop, 23 years old in low A. The average age in low A is like 21. So he was basically 2 years older than all of his contemporaries. He looked like a non-prospect at that point. He moved up the ladder. He did what he needed to do. They actually moved him up that year, and he played a good part of the season at high A Fort Myers, too. Still old for that level as well. But they stuck with him. Obviously, shortstop wasn't going to be his thing in the big leagues. But, man, the evolution of Brian Dozier has been nothing short of amazing. And you see it every single night, it seems like now, because for whatever reason, pitchers are throwing him high fastballs, and he feasts on those.
Yeah, he showed a little pop, I feel like, when he first came up. I probably didn't expect the home runs he's hitting right now. You have to, you know, hat tip maybe to the Twins. I know we criticize them a lot for some of these ridiculous moves they've made. I know some of that was the Bill Smith era and whatnot, but it's unfortunate he didn't pan out as a shortstop, because that still is kind of a position in flux, but he's turned out to be a good second baseman.
In his last three seasons, he's hit 18, 23, and 20 home runs. In four minor league seasons, 1,800 plate appearances, he hit 16 home runs in the entire minor league time that he was down there. So he has unlocked something completely different. A friend of mine told me he is number one in pull percentage, pulling the baseball to the left field corner, basically. So it's clear that whatever his swing mechanics changes were, something that I had diagrammed writing elsewhere a couple years ago, that unlocked something within Dozier that he probably didn't even know he had, dating back to Southern Miss, dating back to the minor leagues. And even when he came up that first year with the Twins, when he got sent back and they didn't even bring him up for a September call-up. I mean, if you've got a guy that you think is going to be a player for you, they get a September call-up even after they go down. Man alive, there were stories. I know that a guy for Hardball Talk had written the Twins need to just wash themselves of Brian Dozier at that point. It was like, yeah. Wow. So he's really come a long way.
Yeah, he. I do remember that. I don't know how much you remember from that last game he played when he was a shortstop, and he could have gone for a double player, could have thrown home against Tampa. And I think Jennings, one of the Tampa Bay players, just walked home. And there was this kind of, you know, you almost put your hands up in the air, like, why did they give so much playing time to this guy? Why is that shortstop? He was an eighth-round pick, I believe, out of Southern Miss. Which
senior
is not,
signed, too, so he yeah. signed for like $30,000.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, and there's something, I think Mike Berardino had a tweet saying he had generated over like $77 million for the Twins or in value or something on FanGraphs.
Yeah, FanGraphs has, basically, they take the FanGraphs war and determine what a guy is worth to the team based on their value. So Brian Dozier, if you look at his career to date, has been worth $79.2 million as of this morning with Fangraphs statistic update that comes every morning. So the surplus value that he's given that team is off the charts. He's already out-earned the entire rest of this contract and probably any other subsequent contract he will get, because when he hits free agency, he's going to be 32 years old.
Yeah.
So the odds of him getting a huge deal and not have been good beforehand into that deal is not, so he's already crazy surplus value for the Twins.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's unbelievable.
I mean, there was some controversy over them not buying into his free agency, but I've always said this first. I remember when he, you know, he had that muff against Tampa. He was just sitting in his locker room, ready to explain what he was thinking at that time. He justified the move as much as he should have gone for the double player, should have gone home. But, you know, I think it's interesting that he actually worked with Paul Molitor over that offseason. You know, I think famously, Paul Molitor said he came without a bat. He was really just working on his defense and trying to be a good second baseman, especially with shifts and stuff this day. That's a hard play to make when you're out in the field. And he's, you know, he's just kind of made himself into a player. And that's kind of what you, Trevor Plouffe, for example, kind of same thing, where we were like, what is this guy doing at third base? You know, he was a guy, again, came up as a shortstop, played in the outfield, played at third, finally has that down, and all of a sudden there's kind of a competition for some of these positions. So broadening it out a little bit, the positive thing with the Minnesota Twins is you have a couple guys locked in, you know, like a Brian Dozier at second base, but you also have competition. Who's going to be playing third? Where do you play at short? Stuff like that.
This isn't a new phenomenon either with Twins players. Michael Kadire started slow. Torrey Hunter started slow. And to kind of loop back around to your point where you're asking about Dozier and the deal and how many years it eats up and everything, is people want those deals to eat up free agency years, but cost certainty and arbitration is also a huge thing. You're not totally sure you want to keep a guy past 32 anyhow. So it's not like they really shot themselves in the foot, I don't think. And you know what? If he's still good through age 32 and they've already moved on from other guys, maybe you can sign him to a 3-year deal at that point too. So I think sometimes you want to overextend to keep a guy that's really good, but at the same time, sometimes certain terms make sense. And I've never been the kind of guy that's been afraid to rip the Twins if I think they deserve it. Right here, I can't do it.
Yeah, no, they've done a good job. I think in terms of hitting, the guys who've come up with a reputation that they can swing the bat have done well. Kenneth Vargas last year, and I know he had to go down, and he's still kind of a work in progress, but he came up swinging last year. Eddie Rosario came up, obviously, the home run on the first pitch. You know, I think if it's Tom Bernanski, or, you know, if it's the minor league guys down there in the system, they figure something out. And who would have thought Aaron Hicks would be hitting like he is right now? They've somehow kind of unlocked. I mean, I know I've been a fan of him too, but it seemed like, you know, he was, I thought he needed to change his scenery. I knew he was going to be a major league player, whether or not he could do it.
I mean, you're talking to the guy that drove the hashtag stick with Hicks bandwagon, probably dating back to that first, whatever it was, 3-for-40-some stretch, or I don't remember how, 6-for-60 stretch. I mean, I had a front row seat to that entire start, and yeah. I tell you, man alive, he looked lost. Right now, again, still not driving the baseball quite as much as you'd like for a guy of that body type. He's a big, I think he's an imposing figure. I don't know about you when you see him in the clubhouse. He's not a huge guy, but he's bigger than you think.
He's an athlete, yeah.
I think he's the kind of guy that's going to drive the baseball. He could have 35 doubles, 15 home runs, and a bunch of triples because he's so doggone fast. This is a guy I think that will be, and people got a little upset when I said this on Twitter, you're starting right fielder next year. And now, that doesn't mean that it precludes bringing back Torrey Hunter, but I think that's at a reduced role. It's a mentorship thing, and it's just a situation where I don't think you want to give, you know, Torrey Hunter's played 81 games to this point, 338 plate appearances. I don't think you want to pencil him in for 130 and 500 next year. I think you got to scale
be
back.
Reasonable.
Yep. You can give him whatever he can handle up front, but as soon as it starts to slip, you've got to be proactive and replace that production as soon as you can.
Why right instead of left for Hicks?
The arm. He's got a cannon. The right fielder, some people might wonder too, because if they're not crazy into baseball, you know, what's the difference between left and right? The right fielder has to throw to third base that has to be accounted for, and I mean home too, but left fielder still throw home as well. The left field throw to third is just shorter, so you have to account for that throw to third. So right fielders traditionally have a better arm. Left fielders like Jock Jones was a good left fielder. He didn't have a great arm, but he could cover a lot of ground. For me, Hicks, I mean, you could in theory have three center fielders out there with Rosario in left, Buxton in center, Hicks in right.
Is
that going to be enough offense? That's a legitimate question. But in this era where offense is depressed a little bit, you can get by with a fantastic outfield defense like that. And you see Kansas City employing the same thing.
Yeah, I would like to see them go that way and maybe put RC on the bench. I haven't given up on him. I think he's had 34 home runs in the major leagues to this point. He had 20 last year. You know, he did look muddled at times. It wasn't encouraging to see him come off the DL and get optioned right to AAA. But I don't like him defensively, and I would much rather have it where your pitchers are comfortable that if a ball's in the air, someone's going to get it.
23-year-olds that slug 450 don't come around every day, especially, again, in this depressed offensive context, in target field, which can play down to left-handed power. You can't give the guy away. I know a lot of people think, don't need him, bad attitude, can't play defense. If you can put him at DH, if you can move some guys around and make something happen where he can play four games, five games a week, and I think you can do that, you got to try.
Here's what's encouraging about the Twins. You have some competition in the outfield. I kind of alluded to this earlier. Competition at third, and you're not banking on Sano playing there. If Sano can't play, it looks like Plouffe can play there. You know who your second baseman is. It looks like you're going to have Maurer at first. Otherwise, Sano could probably play there. And then you have some competition at DH because RC and Vargas probably would be. Vargas could play at first base.
Well, and if Maurer, if they want to try to have him just focus on hitting, which I don't see that happening.
No, I think you want him at first just because he's still a good defensive player, even though that's not a demanding defensive position. My two concerns for the Twins, at least when it comes to the fielding, is two critical positions, which is catcher, because Suzuki at this point looks like a backup, if that. Not throwing guys out, not swinging the bat very well.
Not a good pitch framer either.
Yeah. So I think, and I don't know what Pinto's going to offer you because that concussion looks like it set him back.
A lot.
And then who do you put at shortstop? Do you still, Trout Nunez out there? I think Santana's kind of more, I think he's better than Escobar at what Escobar does, which is basically that guy you can put in the outfield, you can move him around the field a little bit. It seems like Santana, I'd rather have him in the outfield than I would have Escobar. And Escobar, I don't think, is an everyday shortstop. So there's still, I think those are two critical holes the team has to think about in the future.
Yeah, and especially with the trade deadline coming up, you decide to attack that weakness now in a trade market where value might be puffed up and you have to pay full price for a shortstop or a catcher? Or do you wait for the offseason when a guy like Matt Wieters will be available? And do you throw big money at a guy like Matt Wieters coming off of Tommy John surgery? There's a lot of questions. I think you could have another fascinating offseason, but you don't have to go out and probably sign any more pitching. Everywhere else has competition, and you'd like to believe that competition is going to breed success, whether it's the outfield corners, infield corners, anything like that. I think it's going to be a fascinating run to the end of the season, and then the winter, wherever the Twins fall at the end of the year, whether it's 75 wins or 85 wins, and I think you could be in that range, it's going to just ratchet up, and this is going to be the first winter where fans will have something more than just who they signed to be excited about, but how that plays into the evolution of this team as a continued contender, because I think that contention window to be an actual force in this division opens next season.
Do you think they try to do something, go get Tulowitzki, go try to get Wieters, try to figure something out with the catcher and the shortstop?
I wouldn't go get Tulowitzki, not because I don't think he's a good player. He's a fantastic shortstop. His best baseball is probably behind him. You're taking him out of Coors. You got a guy that hasn't played, I don't think he's played 140 games in something like four or five seasons. Again, at the end of the day, if you could get a healthy Tulowitzki, 29 teams would be interested, and the Rockies wouldn't even have him up for sale because they'd probably be a better team and all that. But I think what you have to do is you have to look for a shortstop with some years of control, whether it's arbitration or somebody under contract. I don't know if it's a Starlin Castro or an Addison Russell if you want to trade big prospect for big prospect or for a guy on a big deal, or if you want Gene Segura from Milwaukee, who doesn't really do a whole lot for me right now, but they've got Oswaldo Arcia's brother behind him as a prospect
coming up
the ranks. But you got to address both of those positions in the offseason. You can't go into next year with Kurt Suzuki as your starting catcher, I don't think. The Twins might. But I don't think you can.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a holder. It's not as though I don't think they're holding up too much hope for Eric Fryer, right? I mean, that's...
No. He's an organization guy that can field. And he started out hitting like 400 in the first month of the season, and he's slowly regressed back to his usual line.
That's going to do it for segment one. When we return, should the Twins mortgage their future for a chance at winning? Now we'll get Tom Schreier and Brandon Warren's thoughts on that. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. On Deck Radio is back. Tom Schreier from Cold Omaha and also Cold Omaha's Brandon Warren in studio. And Tom wrote an article about the possibility of the Twins mortgaging their future to win now. And my kind of thought process is on that is just, no. They had a plan for 2016, 2017. Stick with the plan. Use these young guys. Take us through your thoughts when you wrote that article.
Yeah. I think they're headed, if they're going to make the postseason, it's going to be as a wild card, and that's basically a coin flip. I mean, that's a one game, you know, especially when you don't have a true number one. And, you know, they addressed that in the beginning of the year saying, well, Phil Hughes could be that guy, and he doesn't look like it this year. Mike Pelfrey's kind of come back to earth. You know, Kyle Gibson came back to earth in some sense, although he's pitching pretty well. But I think that you don't want to give up. You have a good thing going. You can open another window. The difference between now and 2002 to 2010 is you're not playing in the metronome, right?
The interesting thing about that coin flip, too, and something we'll talk about here, I think, in a later segment, is who pitches that game if the Twins actually do make that spot. But, yeah, I think the drum that I've been banging on that front is you have all these prospects that you in theory could trade for a rental, a Johnny Cueto, if you wanted to just go for it, just go nuts. And then you remove all doubt who pitches that game 163. I mean, it's not game 163, but it's the one game playoff. However, it is also a coin flip. And what if the guy goes out and strains his calf in the first inning, can't finish the game? I mean, there's so many different factors that you just can't control for that could take it out of your control. And on any given game, a guy like Kyle Gibson might have a better day than an ace. That's just how it goes. Now, the other thing is to mortgage your future with those prospects going in the other direction is I think you borrow from the back end of your winning window by pulling those prospects out, sending them to somebody else. And you open the window a little early. It's like you're letting in the warm air quick before it gets cool in the morning or something like that. I don't think that's something I would want to do to kind of like artificially shorten the winning window at the expense of taking a run for it in a year where, quite frankly, you may have overachieved. You might not have the pieces to go deep into the playoffs. But at the same time, the counter argument is look at what the Royals did last year. The Royals do not, from the surface, look like they're constructed to win big games down the stretch, but they've got relief pitching and defense, two things you could argue the Twins maybe don't have. But it means that you don't have to be conventionally built to win in October. You don't have to be the Dodgers with all-stars everywhere or the Yankees of the previous seasons. In a four-game or a five-game or seven-game series, anything can happen. So you just have to be prepared
for that.
Well,
the Dodgers even aren't that. I feel like they benefit from a bad division.
Oh, they're top heavy.
Yeah, and they're kind of bloated, if anything. I think the best idea for the Twins is you hope Vargas takes over, kind of becomes your DH. You hope that the outfield is solidified, as we were saying, with this, essentially, you know, Rosario, Hicks, Buxton, and then Arcia, who has some value because he has some major league power. You deal him to go get a piece, and not a bullpen piece, like a shortstop or catcher.
That'd be bad.
Yeah, you don't. I'm very worried about this because Terry Ryan came out and again, I'm happy that they run the organization where they're not. Even if you're new to the organization, you should never throw the people who, you know, came before you under the bus. But when he said we have no regrets about the Caps for Ramos trade, and right now you could have Wilson Ramos as your catcher, and you know, kind of in a similar vein, have JJ Hardy as your shortstop. You know, I almost like threw up in my mouth. Like I was like, don't do anything like that ever again. Cause the bullpen, you had Glenn Perkins on your team when Nathan went down. I think you can kind of shuffle, and maybe this is what they're doing by putting May and Meyer in the bullpen. Try to use your own arms to solidify that.
I didn't like the Ramos trade at the time just because I didn't see Caps as an upgrade on Roush. Their numbers were virtually identical.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, look at the best closers in Twins history and where they came from. I mean, Rick Aguilera, former starter. Eddie Gordado, former starter. Glenn Perkins, former starter. Joe Nathan, former middle reliever, former shortstop. The closers in this organization that have been the best ones have not been brought up as a late-inning power reliever. You know, the only guy that I remember that actually fit that bill was Jesse Crane, and he struggled out of the gates. Couldn't strike anybody out. And so sometimes, you know, they got Nick Birdie and Jake Reed down in the minors that were just supposed to blitz through this system. Tyler Jay supposed to blitz through this system and be in the big leagues. And Birdie just got sent back down a level. Tyler Jay is getting roughed up in high A. It's
Zach Jones got hurt, too. That was another guy.
Right.
They got
like JT Chargois and all that. I mean, they've got some guys in the minors in this for that bullpen that they could go to eventually. But, yeah, you can't rush those guys either. So it's just I don't know what you do.
Yeah, that's troubling. Birdie, I felt like had major leagues, kind of didn't know how to pitch as a, you know, major league guy.
What I read yesterday was that they don't believe this was an unaffiliated party with the Twins, that Birdie has quite gotten to the point where he reads opponents' swings and pitches to those. So he doesn't sequence things in a way where he's one step ahead of the batter.
Sure.
As a good pitcher will be, you know, one pitch or two pitches ahead and being prepared for what that guy's looking for in certain counts. And he's not there right now, but he needs to get there because I don't think he can pitch successfully in the big leagues without it.
So assessing the bullpen real quick, Perkins obviously is doing well. He's your closer. He's perfect so far. Casey Fien, where do you stand on him? Just, I think he's 31 years old. Not a hard-throwing guy, but has seemed to get by with stuff that's not, you know, swing and miss.
He's fine. He not to make a play on his name or a joke on his name, but he's not striking guys out like he did last year. He's a flyball pitcher, so he doesn't really profile as a strong setup guy. They could really use an eighth-inning bridge. I don't know that you want to pay the price for one of those guys because, you know, then you're probably going out and getting a John Papelbon to rescue him from Philadelphia and then trying to talk him into pitching the eighth inning. I don't know that there's a ton of eighth inning guys that are available. Just because eighth inning is such a weird role. You either got middle relief guys or you got closers. That guy that throws the eighth inning, it's kind of a fluid situation. I mean, Casey Fien, he came out of nowhere too. I mean, think about him and Jared Burton that came to the Twins, I think, in the same offseason. Again, two guys that just came out of nowhere and were two of the highest leverage guys in the back of that bullpen. So building a bullpen is just so hard to do. It's like to follow a blueprint because the teams that build the good ones like the Rays and the Padres just collect arms and then throw the best ones out there. They're sending guys, and the Royals too. The Royals are sending back guys on their bullpen that would be like the eighth or seventh inning guys for the Twins. And these are guys that are going back and forth to Omaha. Brandon Finnegan has been back and forth from Omaha like four times this year. He would be the eighth inning guy for the Twins, and he's just another piece for the Royals. I mean, granted, they want to get him going as a starter, and he's got crazy pedigree. But these teams, and where relief pitching is at in this era with a strikeout an inning and tons of ground balls, the Twins are just lagging behind that.
I think the injury to Presley, and with him, I always feel like he has stuff and it's mental. If he could kind of lock in, and now I'm reading here that he likely out until early September. I mean,
yep, I saw that too.
Maybe you could talk him into that, but it's hard to trust him just given that. I mean, he had that one outing where he walked how many guys? It was like,
wasn't it 8 balls in a row or 12 balls?
Yeah, something 12 balls in a row. That's
but,
it.
But the issue is by the time he comes back, You've already sealed your fate as either a contender or a pretender, sure. Most likely. I mean, it's going to be a tight race. The other thing is, if it's September 1, you don't have the flexibility to make any moves at that point.
Yeah.
You're post not only the July 31 trade deadline, but the August 31 waiver deadline. So anybody that you acquire in September can help you in September, but they're ineligible for the postseason roster. Now, there's something to be said for getting to the postseason, but if somebody gets you there, you probably want to have them with you there. Irvin Santana is another name that comes up there too, is because he can't pitch in the postseason either,
which is unfortunate. He might be your game one, or not game one starter, but the wild card starter.
I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that if he was eligible, he would start that game. You know, Phil Hughes is the de facto ace, quote unquote, of this staff coming from last year. But right now, if you had the Twins ranked him, I think Irvin might be 1A, Hughes 1B. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but yeah, so. With the bullpen, the problem is, too, they haven't had consistent innings for J.R. Graham to see quite exactly what they have there. He's had, you know, a pretty nice run, too. But can you throw him in the eighth inning?
Yeah, he's more of I think his role seems to be kind of like when Irvin had the bad outing in Target Field. He'll get you kind of to that, you know, give you three good innings.
24 appearances, he's thrown 41 innings. So, you know, he's going more than an inning quite frequently, which means he's kind of soaking it up, which he's probably throwing lower leverage.
Yeah.
If you're down 5-1, 6-1 in the sixth inning or something like that. So, you know, you see his numbers, they don't look too bad, but I don't think you could drop him in the eighth inning.
It's like stuff-wise, he's good. It's whether or not he can kind of...
sequencing, it's making sure that there's not an implosion factor. And if let's say you're up 3-2 in Oakland tonight, you're not going to see J.R. Graham in the eighth inning. So you have to get somebody besides Blaine Boyer that can throw those innings. Casey Fien, you know, Dunsing's numbers are starting to kind of round in.
Yeah, he kind of locked in.
He's kind of getting to normalize too. But there's none of those guys that you're going to bring in with the bases loaded and one out, and you're like, okay, this guy's going to strike out the next two guys. You might have a guy that could come in and maybe get a ground ball double play and get you out of that inning, But you want a guy that can come in and get you that big strikeout, whether it's lefty on lefty, righty on righty, or something like that.
Are you really cold on Alex Meyer? Do you think there's a chance that he could lock in the second half and come up and offer something in the bullpen, even if he doesn't take over?
You know, I haven't followed closely what he's done in the minors since going back down, but I like him as a reliever. I really thought they did him a disservice by sending him back, but at the same time, he got his feet wet in the big leagues, and I think there's something to be said for that. The Twins will say, oh, we don't get guys' feet wet just to get it wet, you know, to get them acclimated to the big league lifestyle and all that. But honestly, I think he'll be a better pitcher for having come up in the big leagues and gotten beaten up a little bit. Hopefully, it's a quick return because, you know, the front end of that bullpen is kind of soft right now, and they need the help. And at the end of the day, the trouble is, too, is I think if it weren't for J.R. Graham, Alex Meyer would be your long guy just to get his feet wet, to get him acclimated. You can't have two or three guys that you're trying to shield in that bullpen. You just, from a number standpoint, you can't do it.
One final thought, Trevor May, do you think he makes his way back to the rotation?
Yes.
Do you think he starts in Rochester as a starter, or do you think he bullpen guy until he gets back in the rotation?
I think they'll find a way to get him back in the rotation before August 1.
Mike Pelfrey, make him bullpen. You got to do it.
Or you trade somebody.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're halfway there. Coming up next, Brandon Warren wrote an article for 105theticket.com looking at the most improved Twins from the first half of the season. We'll get Tom and Brandon's thoughts on that when we return. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. Deck Radio, Cold Omaha's Tom Schreier and Brandon Warren in studio. I'm David Helmer, and Brandon Warren wrote an article taking a look at the most improved Twins from the first half of the season. You can pretty much take your pick. The whole team's improved. They've shocked probably a lot of Major League Baseball. Nobody thought they'd be at 50 wins at this point with only 40 losses. It's quite a shocker. But you got Trevor May, Aaron Hicks. A lot of guys have really shown what they can do. Who are some of the guys that really stood out to you, Brandon?
You know, I didn't go into writing this piece with the idea that it was going to be pitcher, hitter. This isn't Bleacher Report. I don't want to jab at Tom.
No, feel free.
I didn't do a slideshow. I didn't do it all cozy with a certain number of players. This was the right number of guys that I thought had taken enough of a step forward to merit mentioning. And I tell you, I spent my trip to Wisconsin. I was driving back on Sunday and somebody had tweeted, I think it was Twins Daily, wanted to know who's the most improved Twin this year. And I tweeted, Aaron Hicks, next question. I didn't really think about it. And if you read the article, I got Aaron Hicks second. So actually, I actually stopped and thought about it too. I thought, you know what? No, Trevor May, for me, has taken the biggest step forward. And I'll tell you why. He's sliced his walk rate in half. Now, year to year, that's a huge deal. Now you think about the fact that this is a guy who spent 6-7 years in the minors, his second year in the big leagues, it's not his second full season. This is a guy who slashed his walk rate in half after doing that for his entire career, walking 4-plus batters per nine. He just stopped doing it like it was something he could arbitrarily, you know, just like you or I could walk off this set right now. He just stopped doing it, just arbitrarily, it seemed like. And he said, you know, he wasn't afraid anymore. He just started throwing strikes, and he didn't lose any strikeouts, and it's been a huge growth for him.
I remember, first of all, I feel like they've handled him well. They put him in a lost season, and they said, hey, you got to go out there and prove that you're a major league pitcher. I remember his first outing and asking him kind of once he came back to the Twin Cities, hey, you know, were you nervous? And he said, yeah, I was super nervous. And even a couple outings afterwards. And eventually what locked in for him and what he told me is that he realized, like, stop being a wuss. Like, he used a word that he can't use on the radio. But, you know, he was basically like, I'm holding myself back. And I think that makes sense to me that's why he's not walking people anymore. He's like, I have good stuff. You can't hit it. I think he has learned how to, you know, use the strike zone better in ball location, changing eye levels and all that. But I think the bottom line with him is he was super nervous coming into the league. And now that he had that taste, and again, in a meaningless season where it really, even that bad outing really didn't hurt the Twins at all, he realized, okay, I've got better stuff than, you know, most other pitchers out there, and I need to just go toss it over the plate.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me from a year-to-year standpoint. I just think the growth against what he had laid, I mean, people were talking about him as maybe a future reliever. That's where his stock was at. Now you're looking at him as like a number three starter, and that's a huge jump. The next guy, again, we harken back to Aaron Hicks, who right now has completely turned it on, playing great defense in center field, and looks like a completely different guy, not only offensively, not only defensively, but his demeanor. He looks like a confident big league player, which is something I don't, you know, you can say you saw him hit some home runs, he stole some home runs and all that. I don't think, though, even in those best moments, you saw that, I hate this word, swagger from Aaron Hicks, or maybe that confidence that I belong at this level. I don't think you saw that from Aaron Hicks in the last two seasons at all, not even in his good games.
It was misplaced confidence, I believe. It was confidence saying, hey, I can come to the park and I don't know who the pitcher is. You know, he lost control of outs. They, you know, when I talked to Tom Bernanski, I wrote a story on him, and even going down into the AAA level, asking a couple of guys down there, they all said, hey, look, you can talk about the light kick. You can talk about the experience. You can talk about this. It's maturity. And I think maturity is, Torrey Hunter put it best, where he says you have to have that inner confidence. You're not going out there telling everyone how good you are. You know, you show up, do your routine, you put in your work, but you have this inner cockiness that Torrey Hunter said, hey, I go out there and I believe that I'm the best player on that field. And I think Aaron Hicks is starting to kind of grasp that a little bit. And I see it most with his walks. When he takes a walk, it's almost like, yeah, you know, I beat you. Almost like he got a double, or almost like he hit a home run. But I think it was misplaced confidence. It was confidence in hey, I can show up to the park and just do my thing. Now it's, hey, I'm going to draw walks when I need to draw walks. I'm going to hit when I need to hit.
I think a lot of fans crave humility from their players. And it's like, oh, yeah, this guy's humble. He's real, you know, put his head down and go to work. Deep down within inside, you can't be a humble professional athlete. You have to believe that you, because it's basically man-to-man combat in baseball. You know, you are facing that pitcher. If you go up there thinking I'm his equal, you're probably already defeated. You need to be, I'm better than this guy, and I'm going to show it. That's ego, if you strip it down to the basic sense. So you have to have that belief or that thought that you are superior to a guy at any given moment. So I think it's good to have that. You have to internalize it, of course, because the problem is if you let it get out, players are good enough to capitalize on your weaknesses, whether it's, you know, your mental, you know, something you show mentally or physically or anything like that. So I think there is a certain level of kind of a bravado maybe or something underneath that you have to feel like you definitely belong and that you are a fantastic guy. You really have to just kind of give yourself these compliments internally to keep yourself going. I think that's what the great athletes can do.
It shouldn't go overlooked, too. What he told me is he said, I failed so much. I've already kind of done everything you could do wrong. And I think what he learned is he's kind of got to lock in now because he doesn't get another chance. And because, honestly, he's already been kind of through the ringer and whatnot. And I think sometimes for a player like that, the impression I got, and I never saw him, you know, play in the minor leagues, but talking to is Bill Springman and talking to, you know, Tim Doherty, some of the, you know, the hitting coaches down there, they're like, I know he never hit 300, but he was an amazing player down here, and that's why he got the call up. And you felt like he maybe was a little complacent when he first came up.
The prospect gurus that you read would say his approach was wonderful. He was Joe Mauer approach-wise in terms of taking pitches and all that. But it almost boiled down to a passive approach to the point where he took pitches, he'd take a ball and then he'd take a strike right down the middle, because in the minors, maybe a pitcher, you know, if he gets behind, needs to just groove one. You know, the big leaguers don't need to do that. But in the minors, guy would come back with just groove one. And that's a pitch the Twins wanted him to drive. Yeah. Drive it into the gap for a double, you know, hit it over the shortstop's head for a clean single, something like that. And that was maybe something he had to get worked out of his system in the big leagues, because let's say he's facing a guy like Tommy Malone who's just going to peck the corner. Well, you're not going to get those fringe calls for the hitter in the major leagues, especially as a rookie who doesn't really have that superstar Joe Mauer strike zone discipline that gets those calls. So I think the league was kind of tilted against him in that sense in his approach, and he just had to kind of rework it. And I think what you've seen is his evolution this year. He came up and was not taking walks. And I know I made light of that on my Twitter account. I was like, gosh, you know, if he isn't going to hit, because he didn't hit, right, he hit a little bit right away and then went down the foxhole, got injured, came back, and was just a man on fire. Right before he got injured, I was like, look, you know, if this is the new Aaron Hicks and it's the same Aaron Hicks without walks,
that's not
going to fly. I mean, the defense is great, don't get me wrong, but you're looking at like a Mike Zunino, just all defense, no offense. It's like, that's not going to work. But then when he became, you know, he got back from the disabled list and was just kind of caught fire, the walks are coming back. So I think he's kind of honed in on his approach where he can drive certain pitches, he can take certain pitches, and he's a really nice bat to have at the bottom of your lineup to turn it over. Not only speed, but he'll be on base a lot taking all those walks.
Exactly.
So the next guy we had was number three. It was Kyle Gibson. It's a guy we've talked about here a little bit as we've been going on. And you look at his numbers on the whole, kind of unremarkable. I mean, if you're an ERA guy, you could love his ERA. He's not a guy that's going to sustain like a 2.85 ERA or anything like that. But his latest stretch, I think it was like his last 10 starts, he's striking out 8.1 batters per nine innings. That's above league average, and he's spinning that with a ridiculous ground ball rate. Everybody knows he throws a sinker that gets just pounded into the ground. The growth of the slider has been big. The growth of the changeup has been big. I think there's a decent chance that you're seeing a reinvented pitcher in these last 10 starts.
Yeah, and I think when he came up, they talked about inconsistency, and you totally saw that. And I think, I don't know what it is with him. It's different than Hicks. I feel like there wasn't this kind of, like we were saying, where he's going to come up and dominate guys, because that's not what he does. I think in part it's kind of the not the maturity side, but the experience side is kicking in, that he realizes kind of what works for him. And the number one thing is disaster control, and he just learned how to keep things from spinning out of control.
Yeah, I think last year he had like a 1-point-something ERA in wins and 11 in losses, and I think the league averages were much tighter than that. But yeah, the growth has been just unbelievable, and lately he's just been a markedly better pitcher.
I think we talked enough about Brian Dozier, but basically his thing was just what an amazing, for a guy who, senior draft, eighth round pick, no power in the minors, at the very least you could justify having him on the field, even if he wasn't productive offensively. The one question is, do you need a traditional leadoff guy, I guess, to, have Brian Dozier drive in right off the bat with the home run?
Jason Stark wrote an article around the midpoint of the season talking about his midseason awards, and he gave Mike Trout, obviously, the MVP, but he did put Brian Dozier in his honorable mention list with a couple extra guys. Do you see him as somewhat of an MVP candidate? Obviously, Trout is the best, but with what he's doing.
Sure. I mean, you're living in a world where Mike Trout and Josh Donaldson still exist. So it's an also-ran status this year, but he's on pace to obliterate last year's breakout season. 20 home runs right now in 89 games, 398 plate appearances. He's got 300-plus more plate appearances to match last year's home run total. He needs three more home runs. He needs 12 more steals to match last year, 20 more RBIs. I mean, I tell you, he's on pace to just blow up last year's numbers. And last year he was like a 5-win player if you like Fangraphs WAR. I kind of like it a little bit, but he's a legitimate in leaner years. This is a guy that could have won the MVP if he keeps this up. Now, the important thing is last year he fizzled out a little bit down the stretch, didn't hit for as much power in the second half. So you do have to kind of keep that in mind. But right now, to just blow up what he did last year, which is unbelievable.
I think he has the intangibles as well. You know, people don't like bringing that up because you can't put a number to it and it's not performance on the field, but he is a good spokesman for the team, and it seems like he's good with the young players.
Yeah, he's a great leader. I think he's one of the best guys in the clubhouse. And the last guy we mentioned was Tommy Malone. I think it's just, he came back from Rochester. He allowed like 3 earned runs in 32 innings and went down there. I think he pitched ticked off.
Struck guys out.
Yeah, where'd that come from? But I think he deserved to pitch ticked off. This is a guy that had 90-some career starts, a sub-4 ERA, and had been in the big leagues for quite some time. I think he deserved a chance to stay up if all things were fair. Now, baseball isn't fair, and MLB is no more of an example of that than anything else. But he's come back. He's been fantastic, and I think you can't argue with keeping him in the rotation right now. I think I'd have bumped Pelfrey for Trevor May, and maybe we'll get into that in the last segment too.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have a guy like that rounding out your rotation.
That's it for segment number 3. Only one to go. With the unofficial midway point of the season just passing us by the All-Star break, we're going to take a look at the teams gearing up for a playoff run. Do the Twins make it? Do the Royals stay on top of the AL Central? We'll get Brandon Warren and Tom Schreier's opinions on that when we return. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. On Deck Radio is back. Pete Wagner covering a wrestling event. Gene and Al are also off this week, but we have Cold Omaha's Tom Schreier and Brandon Warren in studio. I'm David Helmer. And from day one, Pete said there will not be one On Deck program that does not have this song. It was the unofficial theme song, I guess, to the Wild in their great run, but also the White Sox in 05 when they made their World Series run and took down the Astros.
What?
Yeah.
Hey, I do love the song. I don't understand that logic because this is not a hockey show or a White Sox show.
But we're stealing it.
Well, I like it.
It's for the Twins now.
Did you hear that report that Mark Burley was drinking before he had his outing, I guess, in the World Series?
Yeah.
Because he didn't think he would be used and then had a couple beers. They're like, hey, Mark, we got to get you out there.
Put the beer down.
Wow.
Warm up.
This is Red Sox before. He didn't have any chicken wings, I guess, but this is Red Sox before.
You said about like 2005, I suppose.
Yeah, 2005. Yep.
Wow.
It's also funny to think the Astros were in the World Series.
Well, they had Andy Pettit and Roger Clemens there.
That's
year,
true.
So.
This is 10 years ago, too. I mean, we have to remember that. It's hard to believe that's 10 years ago.
Yeah. The Astros have something going on. I don't know how much of a believer you are in kind of what they got going on.
You can't stop believing.
Well, there we go.
Well, they better.
Good segue.
Answered right away. We should talk about the AL Central, though, and the division the Twins are in.
Oh, you mean because that's what we're here to talk about?
Yeah. I do find that the Astros intriguing just because it's kind of they're on the same trajectory as the Twins.
And they're 50-42. The Twins are 50-40. I mean, for all practical purposes, if the Twins dropped two games at the end of the season, they'd be in a dead heat, hypothetically. So, yeah, it's an amazing story that both of those teams are in the hunt. The Cubs, too, 47-41. You're talking about three teams that have kind of dotted the prospect rankings, the top three spots, however you want to rank them for the last couple of years. Those things are starting to come to fruition, and those teams are getting some serious momentum moving forward.
Yeah, on the other side, on the NL side, the Central over there, it's kind of fun to watch just because you have the Cardinals, which are kind of your model organization that's also spying on the Astros. And then you have, you know, the Pirates, who for years were terrible. And that's a team that, you know, in a sports crazy city, has obviously a lot of history and couldn't put it together. And all of a sudden now you're seeing, you know, I don't know if you've been out there. It's one of the most beautiful ballparks in America, and they're filling that up, supporting the Pirates. So, I don't know. I think on, you know, on the AL Central side, Kansas City is probably the darling, the team that was going to kind of go take down the giant in the San Francisco Giants. You know, very close to a victory last year after, I mean, they were down to the A's, right, in the wild card game. And
they started stealing wild on like Derek Norris or something like that.
Yeah.
And then ripped one down. What was it down the third baseline past a diving Josh Donaldson, now a Toronto Blue Jay.
Yeah.
And that was it. I mean, you go from on the ropes, and the A's were the darling of baseball to be midsummer. You know, they were cruising, they were crushing everybody, and then they backed into the playoffs and ended up losing that first one. All those trades they made for Samardzija and Hamill, and they gave up Addison Russell, who's starting at second base for the Cubs. I mean, I think that's what Twins fans worry about, is if you trade for someone like that, you give up a guy who's starting for someone next year, and you see how good they are.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Do you think Kansas City is the team to beat? Do you think they'll win the Central?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the consensus that they have to be just at this point because of where they're at, but the complicating factor is injuries, because Alex Gordon out for quite some time, Miguel Cabrera out for quite some time. The Twins are sandwiched right in between those two teams, so that makes it an opportunist, or not a good opportunity for the Twins to be opportunists. The Twins are also battling injuries, though. I mean, Ricky Nolasco, for as much as people want to say addition by subtraction, was actually a really nice pitcher down the stretch. Byron Buxton is a loss, even though he wasn't hitting because of his defense, because of his speed. So the Twins are going through some issues with injuries, too. Not to the same effect, clearly, because both of those players are the best offensive players on their respective teams. But that does give the chance to the Twins to jump in and hang in the mix, or, you know, take off running. I mean, they're down four games to the Royals. That's one bad week for the Royals, one good week for the Twins, and you could be down to two or one game behind. You can't close the door on anything. I still think Cleveland's in last, and I still think that's the most talented, best team in the division. The White Sox are in fourth. I mean, it's hard to believe it, but they're a half game up on the Indians, and they've underachieved all season long. If their best baseball is in front of them, with that trio of lefties, with Chris Sale and Jose Quintana, who's starting today, and Carlos Rodon, if their best baseball is in front of them, look out.
I would say this. I think Cleveland is probably the most kind of underrated threat. They were predicted to win the World Series by Sports Illustrated. You know, Yahoo Sports just came out and said this is kind of, their rotation is kind of the rotation of the future. It's something, you know, force to be reckoned with. And it seems like if you could get any offense from their lineup, and they do have players that are capable of producing it, I almost think this is going to become a dogfight, and I really kind of wonder if Detroit's kind of the odd man out, if they've just kind of missed their window. And I don't know what's going to happen to the White Sox. I don't think there's a chance in hell they're going to, you know, trade Sale. I think they're going to keep that group together.
His contract's too good.
Yeah, and so do you in my mind, it could become kind of a dogfight like we usually see in the Central, where these guys are beating up on each other, you know, kind of down the stretch.
Even in the new wild card, no matter what, two teams are out in the American League Central. You could have two wild card teams in the division, but then you think, yeah, well, the Angels and Houston are both going to have something to say about that. And somebody from the AL East could pop up, too, and have something to say about, too, because Tampa's playing pretty well. And the
Baltimore's
Blue Jays,
your team.
Baltimore, I mean, Boston's still out of it. They're only six games under 500 for as bad as they've been. I mean, you're talking about every team with the exception of two are six or fewer games under 500. They're all in the race. And so that's the other thing for trades. I think it inflates the value of guys who are available because there's so few teams that are offering players. So if you're Cincinnati, for instance, and you have Aroldis Chapman who you could trade, Johnny Cueto who you should trade, Jay Bruce who you might trade, if you've got four teams interested in Jay Bruce, you're like, all right, submit your best offers by this day. We'll take the best one. You start bidding against another team. You maybe don't know what they're offering. And all of a sudden you get three really nice prospects for 2 months of Johnny Cueto. That's a pretty good bind to be in, so to speak.
It's the one argument if the White Sox really drop off the table kind of to begin the second half, why you might deal Sale, because you would literally get like a full team of prospects back.
The problem is, there's just so much up and down with prospects that you literally have to get two top 50 prospects and then another couple really interesting wild cards to even move the needle at all, and I still just...
And they may never impact your team like Sale.
I think the only team that could offer something like that would be the Cubs.
Yeah.
Or maybe the Astros. The Astros have to probably trade Correa, and they're not doing that. So I don't know that there's a team that's a good fit to give up as much as they would ask for him. And that's probably fair. And then if you trade Sale, then you have to think about trading Abreu and blowing it up. Well, you just spent a whole ton of money on a closer and an out.
No reason to do that.
An outfielder and another first baseman. I just don't see it. I think they're still in the mix. I think the Central is soft on the whole, so everybody thinks they can contend.
Yeah, my thing is, and I know this always came up when the Twins, between 2002 and 2010, they said, well, it wasn't a great division. What I'll say on the flip side of that, it's actually kind of nice to be battle-tested going in the playoffs. I think on the coast what you get is a lot of kind of teardowns and build-ups because they spend, and then they have to unload those contracts or whatever. They kind of have to blow it up if it doesn't work out. I think with the Central, it's actually fun to kind of have this have the division in question and have it, you know, do you think the Twins could actually pass the Royals? What about Cleveland? All that we just talked about.
And I'm not even sure there are any two teams in the division that are constructed even somewhat similarly. I mean, you're talking about Cleveland, all starting pitching. They've got an improved shortstop and third base defense. That was their big Achilles heel. You know, really nice second baseman, really nice first baseman. Then you've got Detroit, who's kind of top heavy, doesn't quite have the pitching they did. The bullpen is kind of shaky. And you look at the landscape, and all five teams are quote unquote contenders in that division to make the playoffs. Maybe not to win the division, but it's different paths. And I think that's what's beautiful about the game is it's not a copycat's game. Now you can try to copy somebody else. Like everybody wanted the Twins to address outfield defense in the offseason, and they didn't. And everybody got upset. Well, look at the outfield defense now. You got Rosario in left and Hicks in center, and you could have Buxton in center and Hicks in right.
And Hunter's not as bad as I think people have said.
And what would you have done if you had gone out and gotten somebody to play center? Does that mean Rosario's still sitting in AAA?
Yeah.
So sometimes the best move is no move because you know you've got something coming up behind that.
But you're right. It seems as though, you know, Detroit almost acts like a big market team. They're going to go get the big contracts. They trade for players. They do a lot of signing.
That's a function of their owner being like 97 years old.
Yeah, Illich. Yep.
And their GM, who I saw at Target Dombrowski, Field, I might add, is on the last year of his deal.
Yeah, so he's probably, just all out.
He's probably orchestrating or being the architect with his next contract in mind, assuming he gets one. I don't see why he wouldn't.
Yeah.
But honestly, if they usher David Price and Yoenis Cespedes out the door, which I expect they will, maybe Dombrowski just wants to head out the door himself.
And then I think Kansas City seems to be the one doing it on the tightest budget. You know,
Gordon can be a free agent after this year too. Got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, because they let Butler go, they let Shields go. Now they've found replacements for those guys, but I kind of
cheap too.
Yeah, and I wonder kind of what the longevity of a team is like. It seems like they've done a good job kind of ferrying their prospects over to the major leagues, but again, I feel like I don't know how big their window is, and I feel like Cleveland kind of does it, you know, on a budget too. Although they have been willing to bring in elite, you know, you got Kipnis, you got Brantley, you got Santana, and that whole rotation. in my mind, this is what I want to see. I want, first of all, Twins can't drop off the table, but I want this competition because I think, you know, for a team that I believe, if they're going to get in the playoffs, we'll get in through the wild card, they have to have that mentality that, you know, every game could be the last.
I think the way the Twins need to attack this trade deadline is get a couple cheap relievers, and that'll be the way to go.
Now, exactly.
Do we have a second to just go, who's your one-game starter for the Twins if you make the playoffs in that wild card game?
Phil Hughes. I think Phil Hughes needs to step it up in the second half. Most talented guy.
Give me Kyle Gibson. He's going to keep you in the game, and he's going to give you the best chance. I want it to be Hughes, and if he picks up steam, he can do it. But I want Kyle Gibson right now to have the ball.
All right, each of you give me about 10 seconds on this. Eight teams in the American League, above 500, only five playoff spots. Are the Twins going to be one of them playing in October?
No. I'm going to say no. I don't think they've got the horses in the bullpen, and I think they're overachieving just enough that when they fall back, they'll have like 82 wins and just miss.
I think they'll make the wild card game. It's a question of, like we just said, who you put in your, you know, who starts that game.
Crazy.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for On Deck Radio for Tom Schreier and Brandon Warren. I'm David Helmer. Have a great day and an even better tomorrow. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.